the place yourself.
And we used to live there, of course, then.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah. Where would you live in the hotel? At the top, the bottom, or did you have a flat?
We used to live, first of all, we used to live in the what we used to call the smoke room, which was one of which we used to use as a, we always called it a smoke, it used to be a smoke room, we used to use it as a dining room, because we could get different table arrangements in there, more than the main dining room, and we used to, you know, spread people out more, didn't we?
With it. Yes, and then you lived in that room in the wintertime.
We used to live in there in the wintertime, and we used to sleep upstairs on the first floor, but in the once the summer came, then everything had to be moved out of our private furnishings and things. We used to go downstairs, which used to be a hairdressing salon in the Savoy, which built the area which we used to, where we've eventually converted into a flat for, I mean, my parents had started on this, Mary and I eventually completed it more when we moved in. But my grandparents saw the potential of this. This was in the 30s.
A hairdressing salon.
A ladies' hairdressing salon.
That's unusual on the Isle of Man to have had that. Can you tell me a bit about how they got the idea? And I've not heard of any other hotels having more than maybe a little kiosk.
Well, this the position of the Savoy, which when you see these photographs, there was an open area. It's gone now. They've walled it up, I believe, these people that are in it now, but that's another story. But it was opened, it had been opened up. They took the wall down, and in those days there wasn't the same planning air as obviously as we've got today, and they turned it into only ladies, of course, it's a ladies hairdressing salon, and one of the windows, the bay windows at the front, which is onto the promenade, was taken out, and there was a double door put on with steps because it's below sea level down into this area, and they ran this through the up until 1939. My grandparents, they had somebody in to run it, obviously, but they were living upstairs. They took one of the bedrooms off because they obviously had to have somewhere to sleep, and they lived on the first floor. But this was another business outlet for them.
Because when did they establish the salon? What year do you think?
I think 1934, just after they went into it, from what I can remember.
And would the visitors at the hotel sometimes use that amenity for the ladies?
They had to, yes, that was, as would you say, a little bit of one-upmanship they had to pay to go into it, I believe. I don't know, I don't never remember the ladies that was in it, but I mean, it was then, I mean, in those days, to go have a salon to adjacent to the property, as we say. But I mean, it was just, again, what I'm going back to see this potential then. I mean, who the devil would think of doing that in the 1930s, really? You know, I mean, apart from normal hairdressing places.
And did that business survive the war, or did your parents were not able to carry it?
They wanted to take it back, I believe, after the war, I believe this. Then my parents were, because they were like this, whether to decide to reopen it again, but they decided, no, they'd leave it for where we would live there, turn it into a bedroom, a little apartment downstairs, and that's what that wasn't my decision, that was my parents' decision. But again, it's history. You wonder now whether if they kept it on, what it would have been like. But so that finished 1939 when the outbreak of war.
Just thinking back to when your parents were refurbishing the hotel at the end of the war, getting ready, did they change anything to get it ready or modernise at the time, or were they just doing it in an urgent way to try and get back?
An urgent way to get it. At those first few years, it was just literally getting accommodation reasonably. You know, I mean, there was no point, I say no point. We just, the finances, you just had to get, as long as it was, the food was all right, everything was clean and well decorated as best as we could do then. To get open, as I say, quite a few people that we know that actually did open that first year. They just, fair enough, and they had a wonderful season, but they had an extra year than we did.
Did the prices have to go up?
Yes, from our 19, when we, going back to when my parents started, we came into it, opened up after the war. They started at, I think it was 1947, 48.
After the war,
a guinea a day. And that was, which was then breakfast. Early morning tea. Obviously, the full breakfast, a full luncheon, afternoon tea, dinner, and a supper of sandwiches and care, and that was it. That was a guinea, that was what we'd call full board, and it was damned hard work, and you can assure you. And that went on right up until the actual full board. We changed it, didn't we, when we were in it, and that was only the last 8 or 9 years that we were in the Savoy, I would say, isn't mm-hmm. it? We went on to half board.
How many staff did they have to help run the hotel? Because that would have obviously been a different...
They used to have, then I would say, about 9 or 10. They were not 10, I think it was, with the kitchen, when they had the ones in the kitchen staff, obviously. They used to have, we didn't, they used to have a whole, a boots, as they used to call them in those days. This is in my grandparents' time. And, of course, chambermaids, waitresses, of course, kitchen, you know, kitchen, the kitchen staff. And again, the bar, of course, wasn't as much as, I don't think there was a proper bar. It was just a matter of if you brought a bottle of wine in or, because again, in those days, it wasn't a...
When did the bar arrive?
My father started with the bar, from what I can remember, and we were only allowed to sell sherry. Gin, whiskey, anything of the high alcohol contents. It was sherries, port wine, beer, of course, they were allowed beer, and you had to close.
Would that have been before or after the war? He got the bar.
After the war. But they start. Sorry, I beg your pardon. Just before the war, because they were one of the few that had one of these that deprived themselves of the license. Then that was in the late 30s. They were one of the oldest. Of that, not talking about the Castle Mowley, but one of the few then. The seasonal places that had these short. In those days, you could only get them from May till September, October. That's all in the short, what they used to call the short term licenses.
So, in your parents' day, there'd be perhaps 10 or a dozen staff in the sort of late 1940s, early 50s. Who would be working then, and what departments would there be?
Well, mainly they used, what, with the family, you mean, with us?
Yeah, who would be helping the family run the hotel in terms of staff?
Well, we used to have them, as I say, the ones, there'd be two or three in the kitchen. Used to be three in the kitchen when we used to take a cook in. But again, we used to work it between the family and going in and help. You know, I mean, they wouldn't be on their own in there all the time, especially in the kitchen. And then we used to have them. We'd have two in the pantry, as we used to call the upstairs, the still room, for dishes. No dishwashing machines, of course, in those days. It was all done by hand. You'd have two chambermaids. And then we used to have two, sometimes three waitresses. We used to vary between two and three waitresses, or a chambermaid waitress. And again, the general cleaners, the ones that would come in and see to the lounges and, you know, the general cleaning of the downstairs areas. So that's, and then of course ourselves, we used to be always there. There was always one of the family, always we all, and we did it all, we carried that on as well. There was always somebody on call. As it should be, because no matter how good staff are, you've got to have somebody there that somebody can go to, because you never know what, when you're ever needed, you know. So you were on call virtually for those months.
Did the family eat with the staff, or did they have a separate staff meal?
They used to have the separate, I mean, I remember they used to eat, have their own meals in the still room, and and we used to then get, and I remember my father and mother doing this, they used to wait until obviously all the guests had be done, and sometimes they would have it downstairs, sometimes they would have it in the dining room, when all the guests had finished, because as I say, they had to come before everything else. That was the way we were brought up with, you know.
When did you first start working? Did you, as a young man, start working in the hotel straight away, or did you do other things before you came into the business?
No, went straight into it.
Was that about 16?
When I was 16 I started. No, I mean, doing, you know, devilishly helping with, you know, cleaning, painting, helping the father brought up with the, not the cooking side, that I... Always, as Mary will tell you to this day, that's where I admit I slipped up. I should have done, but I never did any part of the cooking. There was always some odd member of the family or somebody there that was capable of doing it. It wasn't my strong part, was it, Mary? And you always said I should have done. I mean, in fairness, been able to a bit late in the day now, but I agree. But
how did you gradually take on more responsibility, or did you do that as the years went by and you grew older?
As we went on, as I said, my sister being married with a family and not being involved in that way, there was just mum and dad and myself, until my mum died in 1960, very suddenly. So then, by this time, before this, mind you, I'd been meeting involved with Mary anyway. And Mum died in 1960. And so it left in those days, again, there was still very, very big season, very busy season. So, of course, it was just left my father and myself. But we did have some staff we could turn to, but and some the local ones that had been with us did come and help us out that year. I mean, that first year, because we were floundering. There was no two ways about it. Mary came. I was was very much involved then. She wasn't with me. We got married in 1961. And then Mary and I took it over.
How did you meet Mary? Was she in the trade as well, or?
Yes, but we didn't meet in the trade as such. No, because Mary used to play a lot of badminton, in my youth, we both did. And I met Mary through badminton, but she was very involved in the business in Peel. Mary lived how many years?
1946, we came over to the island. My parents came over to the island, and we.
And you were on
the
boarding
house on the promenade in Peel.
Can you tell me a bit about that? When your parents came over in 1946, did they?
1946. They always used to come over on holiday, and we always used to come with them. And one year, my dad bought this place. Again, just prior to the war, and then the war broke out, so of course we never got to live here. And we eventually came over in April 1946.
Fernlee, is that one of the larger ones, the red bricks?
Yes, near the tennis courts, yes, yeah.
So he purchased it just before the war,
yes.
And was it then requisitioned?
Yes, before ever we got a chance to come and live over here, yes. So we didn't get to live until 1946.
So what was that like, coming to a hotel, again, that had been requisitioned, and how did your father manage to start that with the double burden of being, was he new to the catering trade? Or?
Yes, yes. But, I mean, he was able to work, he was working all during the war, so, I mean, it wasn't as though he was, you know, without work. And then when we first came over, he carried on with his work, and Mum and one of Dad's sisters came over, and that was how we started then. I can remember when we first came over, and the first time I went into the place, it was huge, and I'd look up the stairs, and I thought, my goodness, just coming from a semi-detached house.
From what town?
Stoke-on-Trent,
yes.
Fenton in Stoke-on-Trent. And this enormous place, which, okay, we only had 19 bedrooms, but I mean, it was enormous after a three-bedroom house, you know.
Do you know why your parents decided to come to the Isle of Man?
Well, they always used to come on holiday as children, and they actually met here in the Derby Castle. And then they got married, and there was my brother and myself. We were, the three of us were all born before they came over to the island, and they always used to bring us on holiday. Every year, all during the war, we still came over. We used to come from Fleetwood on the old boats. We used to stay with friends in Portown, near Peel, and then, of course, that was it. When we came over to live, that was it.
So how did your parents find it? Sort of, how old would you have been at the time?
I was 13.
So you would you have helped them in Fernlee?
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
What was it like? Because they must have been plunged into the trade at an interesting time.
Yes. Well, I suppose it was, a lot of it was common sense, really, and you just had to, there again, you see, there was no business, so we weren't starting full right from day one. And I think that they only used two floors to start with. And again, like the Savoy, there was no hot and cold water and one bathroom and, you know, all that sort of thing. And I don't think that there was electricity all the way through it. I'm not sure about that, but I don't think so.
So they gradually worked, so they opened just a few rooms at first?
Yes, yes, for the first year, and then I think the second summer they had the whole place open, and you know, we just learnt as we went along.
Having, obviously, you know a lot about the trade between your husband and yourself, and as it was then, what sort of would be the difference in the business, the nature and feel of the business, between someone like Fernlee in Peel in the sort of, you know, the late 40s, and someone like the Savoy?
Well, I suppose you were there again. You see, we weren't doing. It was only a boarding house in Peel, so we weren't doing dinner. Although it was full board, they had their main meal at lunchtime, and then in the evening it was high tea that they had. But again, it was breakfast, full breakfast, lunch.
A lot of work.
And high tea and supper in the evening, sandwiches and hot drinks or whatever you wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think they charged about 7 and 6 pence.
Mm-hmm.
How did the prices charged at Fernley compare with the prices at the Savoy in those years, do you think?
Well, I think we were about 7 and 6 pence full board.
And
that was 4 to 6.
To a guinea, yes. It was a guinea, and I think it was before the war, it was 10, and I think it was 10 and 6 in the old money. This is my grandparents before, up until the 30s. I think that the same meant the same menu virtually, and the same amount of food and provisions for 10 and 6. And the Castle Mowney, who again my grandparents were very friendly with Miss Rees, that used to be the manageress of the Castle Mowney, and I think they were then, as we were 10 and 6, they were about 2 and 6 more, or 3 shillings more, because the Castle Mowney was really, which it was one of the hotels on the island. Then it was.
And also in terms of social class of the people visiting the two hotels, who would be coming to Fernley? What sort of jobs would they be doing, and where would they be from?
Oh, mainly from the factories and that sort of thing, from the industrial areas, because I mean in those days there was as they used to call them, the wakes weeks. Mm. So that there were certain areas had their week, and you'd get the working class.
So the blue collar, as it's sometimes called.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what about Savoy? Would that be any different, or?
Slightly, but not a lot of difference, John. We got a lot of families. The people with what you were catering for, really. We used to get, they were still, I mean, fair enough, from people that, you know, what. As Mary said, as we would say, the way we used to get wakes people, but not as many as the people, not a lot of young people as much in the Savoy, because the difference between, as I remember my parents saying when they were in the Manningham, which was just off the promenade, that was what they called high tea. The Savoy was that, well, it's like keeping up appearances, the late dinner, they used to call it, 6 o'clock. Well, I mean, it was a late dinner then in those days. But it wasn't high tea. As the Manningham was high tea, so you used to get groups of younger people, now that are now going Greece and Minot, that age group, 18, 19. And you would get more people, you know, so many 5 or 6 to a room in the Manningham. And even in, you know, youngsters, lads and girls, on the wakes weeks. And they were good business. But as Mum and Dad used to say when they went to the Savoy, you got, even then, they used to say, because they were family people, they were a little older in, more mature, if you want to put it in age, weren't they, Mary? I mean, in fact,
yes,
family,
yeah.
More family people. And we used to have youngsters, don't get me wrong, but not as much as the ones that used to come to the, and paying that extra 2 or 3 shillings extra a day. It was what they call possibly a bit,
would you get sort of clerks
market.
And people like that? And floor managers?
And things. I mean, in there particularly, yes, people, more business. Some of them were more involved, more business people, even in those days. You know, they would be managers or they would have groups. Not all, but a lot of people, most of them were family people, weren't they, Mary? Retired people. Used to get people, used to come that would say, right, whereas it used to be Saturday to Saturday. And the booking part of it, you could open, as my mum used to say, you could open and close, do your reservations, everything emptied on a Saturday, people come in 7 days, and that was it. In the Savoy, we always had them coming in virtually every day of the week. I mean, even before the war, before and after the war. So it was more difficult with the booking side of it, you know.
So that would be different to Fernley. Would the change every day be quite strict there? Or were you
No, we were flexible. Yes, but again, it used to be mainly Saturday to Saturday because of these so-called wakes weeks. Yes.
And would the length of the season, would you be open for the same amount of time in those two establishments, or would you the Savoy perhaps be open for longer or not? Would they all be the same?
Not much, I wouldn't think. There wouldn't be much difference.
I don't think so, not in those days. No, there was all
maybe
a week
or
two.
Maybe a few days before practice week, really, wasn't it?
In those days, true. It was.
And did you feel the people coming to Peel were any different to the people who liked to go to Douglas? Were there any things that they particularly valued about coming to Peel?
I think there again, you most probably got some more of the younger families the ones with, you know, little kiddies, because of the beach, and it was quieter. Even in those days, it was quieter than Douglas, and they'd go off for a trip around the island for about, I don't know what it was, about 5 shillings or something like that for the day, and yes.
So as you were growing older and, you know, taking on more responsibility at the Savoy, Mr. Rigby, what sort of things did your father say, sort of like, you know, today's the day, I'm going to let you have control of this job, or did it just grow gradually, just or did he make sure that you jolly well didn't do anything?
They were pretty strict. I used to think it was awful at the time. Today, they just laugh about it today, about coming in to the bar and being at certain times that I used to be in the bar side of it. One of the, not that I'm not teetotal, but I that was one part of the business I never did like. I had to do it, but it wasn't of choice, I can assure you. But no, the rest of it more or less jobs that you did was seen, you know, being on the hot plate, so seen to the food side of it, be not cooking it, as I said, but the serving of it. Oh, we were always there. I mean, there was, used to be the three of us, mum, dad and myself, always involved, either one, somebody in the kitchen and somebody in the upstairs still room, seeing that to all aspects of the food, how it was presented to the people, you know, behind the scenes, this was obviously, and that's how we did it.
Did you feel it was important to have a member of the family available to meet and speak with the guests? Was that
yes,
something
that
you
was
did?
Very important, yes, very much so. And I mean, sometimes it wasn't always convenient, because there was always so much that had to be done behind the scenes, but people expect you to be there, at least some member of the family, somebody that, at some time of the day, which is was fair enough, and that's how we did. We used to do it, and of course it used to be people even up until when, even now, we still have cards, Christmas cards. I mean, they are getting less, because obviously it's a dying race. They are literally dying off, but I mean, that had seen me grow up, people that used to come before the war, that had seen me, and it was always Ronnie, even when I was when we were married and running it was still Ronnie and Mary, or Mary and Ronnie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That had
yeah.
seen me from so high, which was nice. I mean, that was wonderful to us, that they would bring their other generations, would be their grandchildren, would, if they were coming to the Isle of Man, go to the Savoy, you see. And I mean, that was, and that's how you did it. I mean, obviously we advertised like everybody else, but a lot of it was on recommendation, which was nice.
Can you tell me a bit about the advertising and what your parents did, and then what you did yourself in terms of advertising, just thinking on that theme? What was their policy, if you know anything about that?
Well, in my time, remembering it, I can't remember with my grandparents, because even in my time, my grandparents' time, it was all, 99% of it was with letters, of phone, with the phone was, it was used, but very rarely, the phone bookings. It started, I mean, the late 60s and 70s, but we used to spend days, it's Christmas time, December, during December, having these, we used to have these circulars printed, reminders, in other words, more or less like a semi-personal letter printed. And we'd be doing hundreds of these, licking folding these, all by hand, all handwritten. I mean, there was no, in those days, and there'd be piles of these things on the table, and posting them, remember, you know, such and such, and they were all, and little postscripts put on them to people that we knew personally. And we were days and days doing this.
How many do you think there would have been?
Well, to me, there seemed to be hundreds. I mean, at that particular, I had the job of folding them and sticking them, blasted things into these letters. And then Mum and Dad used to be addressing the envelopes. And but again, it paid. That was what we used to advertise in the guide. That was our main, the Isle of Man, the official guide. But that was virtually all we did.
Any newspaper advertising or wireless?
No. Never did any not in our time at all. No, we never.
What about your parents at Fernley in terms of advertising?
Again, the guide.
The tourist board official guide.
I don't know whether they ever did anything in any other papers. I don't know. They might have done in latter years in the newspapers, but I don't know.
We never did. We used to advertise sometimes for staff in when it started to get on these dicey years, when it was getting very difficult to get suitable staff. You could get staff, but you know, there's a difference between, you know, you get plenty of inquiries, but those that we thought were suitable used to send them out quite a lot, you know, but so I mean, that was the only advertising regarding the paper, you know, the Scottish and Irish national papers when we were wanting seasonal staff.
Did the staff that you yourself with Mrs. Rigby took to the hotel, were they the same sort of people and places that your parents and grandparents had staff from, or did you have different preferences?
We did eventually, when we were first married, we carried on virtually the same, didn't we? We were some of the,
yeah,
I mean, obviously
of
not
some of your mum and
some
dad's
of mum and dad. Then again, they were getting too old. I mean, obviously, you know, getting past it really, until 1965, and we had then, it was the biggest change we'd ever done, I think the family had ever done, because we'd never employed, we'd had people in helping us, men, mainly, it was always women. We used to take them from, where was that, the centre, the before we had the other staff married, from the Valamona, the ones that used to help us in the kitchen, Chris,
oh,
and the ones that used mentally
retarded. They were from,
which
yes.
was no disrespect, I mean, they were,
yes,
they did their
Balmona,
job,
but
they
were
supervised.
Kind of yes.
And we used to take them from, they used to see, say the ones that were suitable, and it was pocket money they for them doing potatoes, and I mean, you know, cleaning the yard, and you know, I mean, it wasn't a bed, it was,
yes,
and they
yeah.
were, they were, they
and
were,
some
they
of them
were very, very
years.
Good, and for years, and then eventually they. That stopped, whether they, I can't remember now whether they put more restrictions on them, and that stopped, and we had one dreadful year for staff in the mid-60s that we couldn't be, you know, things were being stolen and things, and they weren't blood, this wasn't locals, these were ones from, came in from the mainland, and we decided then to have Portuguese staff because we'd been going to Madeira for many years, and we'd been approached for many years just from these boys and girls, qualified, especially the boys were, in the hotels, because they couldn't get employment, but that they wanted, you know, in Madeira. And we started in 1965, and it was the best decision we'd ever made for years, because we had them for, sir, 12 or 13 years. It was,
until
we used
they
to bring
the
them, until
here,
they stopped us here.
They wouldn't give us work permits.
They stopped us in the aisle. I'll never forgive them for this, because it was just, they, quite rightly, the unemployment was high, I agree. That I would never argue, not like it is now. And because we had to guarantee we weren't going to be any encumbrance on the Manx government, quite rightly. So any problems, I had to sign that anything went wrong, I had to get them back to Portugal, to Madeira, which was fair enough. So we paid the flights over. And I'm not talking about medical, naturally, under any medical problems, but they had to go back at the end of off the island at the end of the year, or September, October. If they could get other employment, which of course they, well, the palace, different other hotels were wanting them, and we finished with them, that was their decision. I mean, that was up to the board down here. I mean, their contract with me terminated in October. So for the first few years, some of them stayed on the island into the winter, came back to me for the summer. Some went back to Madeira and then came back. But again, we paid. And they stopped us right out of the blue in 1979, I think it was.
Was that an idea that you had that was quite unusual?
It was, very much so. We were approached by many different people in the trade, could we get them for them, because they used to live in, you see, it was full, everything was found for them, and we had our, obviously, I mean, ups and downs behind the scenes. I'm not talking in front of the people. They were emotional, naturally Latin temperament, between husband and wives used to come, but that's, we accepted this, didn't we, Mary, because that's human nature. But work-wise, and as Mary will tell you, they were wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, can
wonderful.
Can you tell me a bit about that, Mary?
Mary, you can.
Oh yes, they were absolute gems, and they would do anything, and they never wanted to go off duty. They wanted to stay there all the time, didn't they? You more or less had to force them, and no, you know, go to bed, you better go to bed, it's bedtime. And they couldn't understand why they had to close the bar at 11:45. This they could never understand.
No, the boys, no.
Oh no, no. But work-wise, they were absolutely excellent. Excellent.
So how did you get the idea? Was it just that people spoke to you on your annual holidays in Portugal and you sort of thought...
Yes, well, a lot had approached us, hadn't they, over the years?
Yes, because all...
And we hesitated, and then one year when we were away, I collapsed.
You did?
And,
mm-hmm.
you said, right, that's it. We're going to see if we can take any, if we can get some of the Portuguese staff, which when we got home, we inquired about it, and we did, and
they
and that
gave
was
permits.
It. And, they gave us the work permits for them. And
did you use an organisation in Portugal, or did you make personal arrangements?
You made personal arrangements. And they were coming from, some of them came from the Savoy, funnily enough, that we'd stayed with for many years, the Savoy in Madeira, which is a 5-star hotel anyway. And I mean, we always used to tell them, to try and get over to them, the 5-star hotel on the there compared to coming over to a small family-run hotel was going to be quite a gap.
No comparison.
Well, obviously, I mean, but the difference was they were being treated in those days, because it was before the revolution, to be actually seeing the patrão, as they would call it, the boss, you know, the owners, actually working, physical work. And of course, and to this day, isn't it, Mary?
Oh yes, we still see them to this day.
Oh, yes,
I mean, some of them now are retired. And
oh yes, got their
some
own
of them have got their
now.
Own businesses. And
but they couldn't see
families
it wasn't their yard as the owner, and the owners what for you to do things that we were there to do. That was their attitude. Whereas the English attitude was, as we had another pair of hands, fine, but we used to do this and we never changed, and you would.